Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I am the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Lenore Micah. Lenore is the author of a prize-winning short story collection and the recipient of numerous awards, including a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship. Her fiction and nonfiction have appeared or are forthcoming in American Scholar, The Normal School, Virginia Quarterly Review, Poets and Writers, Quartz, New England Review, 5 Points, and others. Welcome, Lenore.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Maureen.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you. Let us know what you're working on right now.
Well, what I'm working on right now is a collection of essays and memoir about my move 8 years ago from the North to the state of Florida.
That sounds really interesting. So is it about the actual move or the difference between the two places?
It's about the actual move and the subsequent adventures that have occurred since I've lived here.
Where did you live up north?
Well, my husband and I moved from Massachusetts, mm-hmm. from the Boston area, but I am actually from upstate New York originally.
So different.
So different, yes.
You would be preparing for the hard winter right now, or starting to.
I would. I'm glad I'm not.
Yeah, but my friends live in Minneapolis, and I'm like, we left with like the last little bit. We were there like 2 weeks ago, and they are like, yep, next week it starts. And now I'm looking at it, it's like 46 degrees this morning, and I'm like, oh my God. You're Florida babies. Have fun up there. So tell us what a typical day looks like for you as a writer.
Well, I am generally a morning person. So, and I hear a lot of writers say that they tend to get the writing done first thing in the morning. And that's very true for me. So typically, get up, I take care of the dog, and I hit the desk and write for a couple hours first thing in the morning. And then am doing my freelance work thereafter. So that's kind of how it goes. It's not a particularly exciting existence, but
well, maybe not from the outside, but we have a wonderful internal process that is very exciting.
That is true. It's very exciting in my mind.
I know. That's the fun thing about being a writer. Like, you're just kind of chilling with your butt in a seat, but you're traveling all over in different worlds and experiences. So
it is very true. That's very true.
How has your writing process changed over the years?
Oh, gosh. That's really hard to pinpoint because I know that it's changed a lot. I mean, some things have stayed the same. I do find having a routine, having hours marked out in the day really works the best for me. But I think maybe the thing that's changed the most is I feel more in touch with my intuition about things. I think earlier in my writing career, I was very hung up on being a good student and, you know, clocking a certain number of pages and a certain number of hours and, you know, submitting to X number of places and all the stuff that goes along with it. And now I'm much more respectful of what my brain and body is trying to tell me when I need a break from it, when I need to go for a walk, when I maybe need to take a month off from a project, which I just got through doing, you know, a month ago. I just didn't write at all for a month because I needed that break. So I think that's a big part of my process that's changed.
Well, what changed, what caused you to make those kinds of changes?
I was making myself miserable. I
yeah.
mean, I was really unhappy doing the thing that I allegedly loved doing the most in the world, which is crafting stories and essays and wordsmithing. You know, I know there are a lot of writers out there who say that they hate writing and they can't stand it and it's just torture the whole time, but that is generally not my experience unless I'm trying to force myself to do something that I just don't want to do or I'm just like depleted from being able to do. So I think I kind of hit a I don't want to say a crisis point, but I definitely had some moment where I said to myself, this is not working for me anymore. And I really need to maybe cut myself some slack. And yeah. So that's what happened.
That makes me so sad to think people saying that they hate writing, you know, like I'm miserable. This is the worst thing ever. And I'm like, why are you doing it then? Like, what are you doing to yourself? How do you like live? How do
I
you
know,
live?
You hear it all the time, don't you? I mean, you hear it all the time in interviews. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's just like crazy talk. So what are some of your major themes and why are these your themes?
Well, let's see. My major themes, I think, you know, the project that I'm working on now really encompasses all of them. It's sort of like it really comes down to questions more than anything else. It's hard for me to, you know, have the pithy, like one word theme thing. I work better with questions. So I think for me, a lot of the things that come up are, what does it mean to be home? What does it mean to belong? You know, what is identity or self-actualization and how do we move in the world and, comfortably in our skin or not. And interestingly, I think a lot of those questions also tie to broader issues or interests around migration and movement and both in the human and the natural world. I think that's one of the really wonderful gifts that Florida has given me is nature is so in your face here that it was much easier to ignore somehow living in an urban setting in the Northeast. It's not that I didn't enjoy nature, but it's different here. You know, it's like crawling into your front door and
yeah.
growing in your window panes and, you know, appearing in your bathroom. So I think nature is a big piece of it too. So yeah, that's kind of what I would say are the primary themes of my work.
I remember I had a friend visit and she'd never been to Florida before. And she's like, so tell me what's like special, like what is very indicative to Florida? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And then like, not even like within a half an hour, I was like, oh, well, lizards and oh, this and oh, oh, we have this and oh, yeah, there's this. And it was like, it all like presented itself within an hour, like 15 things that make Florida so different. It is
yeah.
Like, it's the gift that keeps on giving, especially if you're really like drawn to what it has to offer, like as a narrative form. It's just such a magical place.
People
complain about Florida so much, but it's like, you just don't get it. You don't
get it. It is like a very, I would use that word magical For me, it's been a really great source of creative inspiration. So, I mean, I'm very much drawn to setting, and I think a lot of my previous work touched on setting the physical landscape a lot and human relationship to that, but it's taken on a whole new level. It's been taken to a whole different level here, for sure.
So when you get an idea for a story, is it a line you hear, or is it that question, or do you hear characters?
It's a little bit of everything. You know, I think with fiction in particular, a lot of times I think it presents itself maybe as a problem or you know, I'm not sure if that's quite the right word, but it presents itself sort of as a question or a problem in terms of like you know, how do two people get along in this unusual circumstance? And usually there is a central character or voice or idea behind that. With my nonfiction, I find the ideas different because they're, I mean, both forms are personal for me, but you know, for me in nonfiction, it's what's happening to me immediately, and how am I trying to make sense of it in a way that I can actually put in an organized fashion on the page in a way that makes sense to me and to hopefully a reader. So, yeah, it's a little bit of everything, I guess, ultimately.
So, are you a go with the flow writer, or do you plot your stories out?
I am go with the flow. I tend to start, the plotting comes much later in the process. I tend to start with go with the flow, you know, and see if something has legs. And a lot of times it doesn't. You know, I was recently visiting my family, and I was telling one of my sisters that I just have reams and reams and reams of unfinished stuff on my computer and in notebooks and you name it. And maybe someday I'll go back to and visit some of those things and they'll, you know, be renewed in my brain. But a lot of times they don't, they're not sticking, you know. So yeah, it's more like, oh, when I get to sort of a critical point in the early drafting, there's usually a point in, you know, I don't know, like page 7 or 8 where I feel like, okay, there is something here that I can work with. And I usually try to draft it out. And then later on comes the rearranging and the structure and all of that.
So you know about page 7 or 8 if it has legs or not.
Generally, yeah. I mean, I don't know that I've actually ever looked to see, like, is there, you know, is it the magical number seven? But that is my instinct, I think, right now talking to you, that it's generally at that point.
That's cool that like you don't get to like page 50. You're just like you know yourself enough. You know yourself well enough and your writing process well enough to go, let me just table this for a while.
Yeah, although I will say, kind of looping back to your question before about how has my process changed? I mean, I think that was part of my issue earlier was I would resist the voice that was saying, "Don't go, don't go." And I would write 50 pages or 100, and you know, I wrote a whole novel, or not a whole novel, but I wrote 150 pages worth of a novel, and it took me literally years to realize this isn't the reason why you're having difficulty with this project is because it's not going anywhere. You know, so I think now, I don't know, maybe it's like midlife and mortality, you know, knocking at my door all the time, but I just feel like I don't have time to waste on 150 pages. I just don't want to do that anymore. So
Yeah, but it's also probably your intuition now. Like you kind of already know.
Yeah.
This isn't working. It's not worth beating my head up against it.
Yeah.
Against, you know.
No, I think that's true.
And you might, you know, you never know. You might come back later on and you might have to live some of the life that the story needs or who knows what. But it's an interesting a way to grease the wheels. I'm not a fiction writer, so I do memoir and, you know, personal essays or prose poems, that kind of stuff. But I always find it so fascinating. Like if you're really in a story and then all of a sudden you're just like, wait, this has got nothing more to tell. I have nothing more to tell, or there's so much more to tell to the point that you have to have a series of books. It's so fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much that just never makes it into, you know, my stories. It's really frustrating. I wish I could fit all of it in, but nobody would want to read that, you know, or at least not in that particular format. So
you already said that you would tell your younger writer self to like abandon things earlier than go on and on and on with something. But what else would you tell your younger writer self?
Oh, I mean, I think the advice I tell my younger writer self is the same advice I still need to remind myself of today, which is don't play the comparison game. As an old friend of mine always used to say, there's always a supermodel out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Longer legs and, you know, a bigger smile. So I think, you know, comparing myself to the output of other writers or the success of other writers or, you know, just the quality of the work, I'm, you know, of course have aspirations to write as well as your idols, but, you know that for me, it's knowing that I'm never gonna write anything like even remotely close to Virginia Woolf or Toni Morrison. So, I use them as models, but not as competition. They're way, you know, I'm not in their league, even close. Yeah, I think that's a big one is just don't play the comparison game. And I guess the other bit of advice I tell myself is take other advice, be open to other advice, and also find the balance of taking it with a grain of salt because I have discovered over time that I am much more impressionable than I realize I am. I always thought I was some sort of like, you know, independent, strong-willed, determined person. And what I have learned about myself is that I'm incredibly impressionable, particularly with the opinions of people that I admire. And those people aren't always right. In fact, a lot of times they're not, or they're giving advice that's the wrong advice for me.
Yeah.
So I think, again, it does come back to this idea of intuition and trusting myself and not paying attention to things that might waylay the process for me.
Yeah.
That's been a tough, long lesson to learn and is ongoing, I think.
Yeah, and I also think that we all have our own specific writer's journey. And I think that it's important to honor that and trust it and go along for the ride. You know, I mean, we can give it our all, we can send all of our writing out, we can do all the right things, and maybe we have just a quiet career. Maybe we have a huge, gigantic, bombastic career. You know, a lot of it is synchronicity and who you know and timing. And there's just so many factors that are way beyond our control. And yeah. I think the best thing is to keep showing up at the page and just doing our best and staying open. At least I'm trying to just stay open to let my writing career lead me where it needs to go. And I do my best and, you know, show up every day. And sometimes if I get jealous of people, I'll unfollow them on social media. That's a little secret. That's a little secret I have. And it really helps because,
I went the extreme, which is that I'm not on social media at all. I just couldn't handle it. I realized I really couldn't handle it. You know, it was such a huge distraction from the writing. And, you know, and I think it's worth saying, this feels related, so I feel like it's worth saying, there's writing, there's the stuff that we do every day when we sit down with pen and paper, or computer, whatever we use. And then there's sort of, in air quotes, being a writer, which has nothing to do with writing and is, you know, going to conferences and being on panels and teaching seminars and, you know, doing interviews, which is all great. It's great because it gets the word out there and it helps a lot of people. I find, you know, going to conferences helpful. I find listening to podcasts helpful. But I think it can also trick us into thinking that we're living the life of a writer when actually living the life of a writer is principally writing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. There is that there. And then also like just creating content instead of actually being creative, you know, you're just putting words and thoughts and ideas out in the world, but you're not actually creating something that is has tangible value. Yeah. And that's where social media can really get you tripped up. Because you are writing and commenting and responding to all this stuff, but is it actually getting stuff down on the page? And yeah, and I'm hearing a lot of more and more people are just like, I'm not even on social media, and it's like such a luxury. And, you know, I think using your platform to promote your work is good.
Mm-hmm.
And but you got to be careful because it wants you. It'll suck all your energy. But
yeah, I just wasn't good at managing, you know, I was not good at managing my headspace around it. And I wish that I were better at it. Maybe at some point I'll dip my toe back in that water. But for now on this project, it just the internet's distraction enough, you know, social media is like a whole nother beast for me. So.
Yeah, be you. So let's hear some of your work.
Hear some of it?
Yes. Do you have something to share?
I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a little bit, like a couple minutes to share?
Yeah, I do. I can actually read something from the book in progress. This actually just came out in the normal school, so I'll just read.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So this is called Florida Woman, and it just went live on the normal school last week. Shortly after moving from Massachusetts to Florida, I began to receive a distinct style of text from loved ones I'd left behind. These consisted of screenshots from social media feeds or URL links to newspaper articles. Florida man calls 911 after kitten denied entry to strip club. Florida man tries to steal a rack of ribs by stashing it in his pants. Florida man chews off another man's face. The most frequent and famous of the stories sent to me wasn't about a Florida man, but a Florida woman, a 20-something former model turned meth addict. She'd been responsible for burning down a 3,500-year-old bald cypress tree, which, at the time, was considered to be the oldest of its kind and the fifth oldest tree globally. In Greek mythology, a beautiful young boy named Cyparissus is gifted a stag by Apollo, who is god of many things, among them truth. The stag becomes the boy's beloved companion, but this love is short-lived. One hot summer day, while the animal rests in the shade, Cyparissus accidentally kills the stag with his javelin. The boy is so distraught by the death of the animal at his own hands that he sobs himself into a cypress tree. In his transformation, Cyparissus is said to provide shade to those lost and to the living who grieve their passing. In many cultures, the cypress tree is a symbol of mourning. Once covering vast swaths of the country, today there are very few bald cypress trees left in the United States, and even fewer that are virgin growth. A frequent visitor to the tree, Florida woman often concealed herself inside the ancient cypress's hollow trunk so she could get high. One night, she and a friend jumped the fence encircling it and crawled inside. The cypress's interior was dark, made darker by a setting sun and dense swampland. It was also, the woman later reported, chilly. In another Greek myth, fire is given to man by Prometheus, a god sometimes called the supreme trickster. Florida woman lit a match. Though the texts I received were often accompanied by emojis of palm trees, alligators, and flamingos, or the meaningless LOL, they made me uneasy. I sensed loved ones were expressing their disapproval of my decision to move here, and by extension, their disapproval of me. Who knows? Maybe they were. Maybe I agreed with them. The time of those texts was early days in Florida for me and my husband, Jay. I did not yet know what I thought.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's so cool. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure.
And thank you for just, I think, I love Florida so much, and it's so wonderful to people that move here from other states, and like, they really get it. Like, they're just like, yeah, you guys don't know what, I mean, crazy ass shit goes down here. Like, we know this. It's a rogue state. But there's so much development. It's almost like you have to have that contrast. It rebels, which I love. And
yeah,
as you said, I love that you said like, it, you know, it, I'm thinking of like, I live in a wooden house and we always had concrete houses. And my mother's like, there's so many ants. Like, oh, it's a wooden house. Like, it's Florida. Like my father, I just went through his whole library and he would turn his air conditioning off because he'd go camping for a week, but his books are just like dissolving. And it's like, you can't do that in Florida. It's like, you can't, it'll take it back. The Anthropocene, it'll take it back. So
it will take it back. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing. Yeah. And I think too, with this project, I'm pushing back on some of the, you know, the tropes about Florida. This particular thing that I just read is really interrogating that whole meme and where it comes from and how unfair and in many ways cruel it is. So I think for me, I feel like Florida is a unique place, but it also is a microcosm of America in so many ways. And I don't think the rest of the country necessarily understands that, you know.
And I like that you personalized it too. Like, does this reflect on how you see me? Because we live here too. And that kind of, you know, like everybody who lives in Florida is for banning books. That is not true.
Yeah.
You know, or we're racist, or we're this, or we're this, just because people in power in our state happen to preach these certain ways of being that isn't the way we all feel. And
right.
So I'm glad that you're writing kind of a response to that, and also standing up for our lovely sunshine state. Because I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Maybe part of the year when it gets hot, but definitely not year round. Because today it was 60 this morning, and like now it's like a nice 75, which is heaven weather. And what are we, like, almost in November? Yes, please. Yes, please.
I know, it's amazing.
We're almost through hurricane season, so
No spaghetti models, please.
nope. And at least we have warning. Like, that's another thing with hurricanes, we have warning. And so it's funny. Well, Lenore, thank you so much for sharing your work. And you gave us some wonderful new insights that we haven't gotten before on Typewriter Talks.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Maureen. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, and I really appreciate you. And thank you also for teaching with us. You have a class coming up. And with our, if you are local in St. Petersburg, please, or even Florida, please go to keepstpetlit.org to learn more about all of our programming. We just got a new website. We have an online store, which helps support our programming. And we also will be announcing a chapbook contest for our newly acquired Yellow Jacket Press, which is the premier chapbook publisher since 2008 in the state of Florida. And we will be publishing a poetry chapbook, a fiction chapbook, and then also a hybrid chapbook in 2024. So, once again, thank you, Lenore. And everyone, please, until we see you next Thursday, please continue to read and write on.
Thanks, Maureen. Thanks, everybody.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.